I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. I just wanted to let you know that this episode of Vermont Edition has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. After a study last summer revealed some projections for what effect it might have on the state, this year the legislature passed a bill that would raise Vermont's minimum wage from $10.50 an hour to $15 an hour by 2024. The legislation passed the Vermont Senate this winter by a comfortable margin, but it squeaked by the House last week. The tally was 77 in favor and 69 opposed. It came as no surprise that Republicans in the House unanimously opposed the bill. The Republican Party had stated their party opposition to the bill prior to the start of the session, while the Dems had said passing this legislation was something they very much wanted to do. But in the House, a few Democrats voted against the legislation. And if the votes stand, the bill is unlikely to withstand a gubernatorial veto. Governor Scott has not officially said what he'll do with this bill, but it's all but certain that he will veto it. So where's the rub, and what is the sense of how this would help or hinder the state? Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to talk about what the bill would do and get perspectives on how people think this might affect the state's economy, businesses, and low-wage workers. Joining me for this conversation are two representatives who fall on opposite sides of this debate. Sarah Copeland-Hansis is a Democratic state representative from Bradford. Don Turner is a Republican state representative from Milton and the House Minority Leader. Thanks very much to both of you for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.
Have you recovered from your brief respite here from coming back to the legislature? Are you feeling a little rested
still
today?
Still a little sleep deprived.
Don Turner, you?
Yeah, it's been a challenging few days, Jane.
Yes, I can imagine. And I do really appreciate you being here to talk over this, especially since its future is still yet to be determined. But it's helpful to know what's in the bill and why there is so much debate about it. So, Representative Copeland-Hansis, what is the necessity, as you see it, behind having a wage increase to $15 an hour?
Well, there's really no better time-proven way to lift workers out of poverty than to raise the base minimum wage. We talk a lot about making Vermont more affordable, and being from a small town in eastern Orange County and being a business owner myself, I understand both the struggles of my neighbors and the struggles of the small businesses in small town Vermont. And I believe that this would be the best way to lift those low-wage workers out of poverty and give them a little more stability in their family finances.
So in other words, $10 at $10.50 an hour, which is what the minimum wage is right now, is not sustainable for people to live on.
No. It's definitely much better than 8 years ago when I first went into business and the minimum wage was $8.06 an hour. It is pretty hard to put food on the table and keep a vehicle going to get yourself back and forth from work. So $10.50 is definitely an improvement. But it is not a wage at which you could sustain a family, even with two parents working.
Representative Turner, I want to get to your opposition to the bill in a moment. Mm-hmm. But just on this idea of $10.50 an hour, do you agree that that's unsustainable for people to live on if you're working 40 hours a week at $10.50?
Yeah, Jane, our opposition was based on a lot of detailed economic...
I just want to know on this, that particular issue, and then we can get into the opposition.
Sure.
Because there certainly are a lot of questions about what this would do to the state economics. But the question, that sort of fundamental question of, is $10.50 an hour adequate for people to live on? Is that something that you sort of agree with, that the problem is there and the solution is a different one?
No, I don't, because I don't think the minimum wage is intended for someone to make a living on. I think it's designed for students and people just starting the workforce. It's not designed for people to make a living on, and it's proven all across the country. I think that this wage increase will have unintended consequences to the people that are trying to make a living off it, and hurt them more than help them.
Good. We're going to get into that because that is the crux of, mm-hmm. of where the opposition is here. Representative Copeland-Hansis, do you have a sense of how many people are actually trying to live on the minimum wage in Vermont?
I do. I have some statistics on that, and I would say that if it's not intended to be the wage that sustains people, then we have a lot of work that we need to do to raise the minimum wage. Because over half of minimum wage workers earn half of their family's income, or more than half of their family's income. 65% of them are over 30 years old, and 55% of them are women. And so we know that the minimum wage is affecting more than just young students or people with a voluntary job at later in their career.
So, Representative Turner, you believe, though, that this bill is not going to do what the people who support it think it will in terms of raising all boats and making sure that people have a livable wage. Why not?
I think it's going to hurt them, Jane. And we've had a lot of detailed economic analysis, even from the state economist, that a law requiring the minimum wage to increase to $15 an hour would increase the cost of living for the most vulnerable. It would cause a reduction in wages. It's going to eliminate jobs. It's going to put thousands of low-income Vermonters in a position of falling off the so-called benefits cliff, which, as I said, is opposite of what is intended with this legislation.
You say, let's talk about some of the specific areas that you're talking mm-hmm. about where the opposition is. One of them is a loss of jobs. And I believe the state economist suggested that there would be perhaps 3,000 lost jobs mm-hmm. if this bill goes forward. And that would be by 2028, which would be, you know, 4 years after. It's a gradual increase. And so that would be four sure. years after the $15 minimum wage. But that's about 1%, right? And he also estimated that there would be an increase of wages of $240 million for Vermont workers. So that doesn't balance out for you?
It doesn't for me. I think there's absolutely a fine line in which we have to work. And I am all about helping Vermonters, vulnerable Vermonters. We all want to do that. But we can't put it on the backs of small businesses, which employ 90% of Vermonters.
That's sort of separate in the sense. So you mean because small businesses would leave or cut wages that there would be those 3,000 jobs?
I think small businesses will be driven out of business is what I believe.
So Representative Copeland has sort of two pieces there. And one is there is an estimate that 3,000 jobs would be lost. And I guess you can look at the $240 million in increased wages and say that's a good thing. But to the 3,000 jobs, you know, depending if those are people who then don't get another job, that's huge for those individuals. So how do you balance the benefits versus the negatives in the projections?
Well, I know that many folks who are working minimum wage jobs are holding down two or even three jobs themselves. And so from the perspective of the worker, if they could have just one job that supports their family and gives them enough in their paycheck to keep a car running and pay for housing and food, they might not care if they had to give up another job or two. But truly, the benefit of increasing wages means that people have a lower dependence on government services and more ability to sustain their own family on their own. And it is truly immeasurable to see the positive benefit in somebody when they no longer have to carry that stress. It is hard for somebody to be focused and intent on the job that they're doing for me if they're trying to figure out how to be able to afford snow tires on their car, or who's going to pay for the summer babysitter that they're going to need as soon as school gets out.
People who are earning $15 an hour, by the way, are still going to be facing those issues. I mean, that's a question for people even well beyond the $10 minimum wage that we have now.
It's true. But when you have a few more nickels to scrape together, it makes it just a little bit easier. And I think that's better for people, which is better for business.
But this question of the benefits cliff, and we'll come back to you as well, Representative Turner, you know, this is often talked about when people start to make more money. If there's not a gradual reduction in the benefits, then there is a cliff where suddenly, you know, if you make 50 cents less an hour, you're getting some government benefits that help keep you afloat. And then you make a little bit more money and those benefits go away. But that doesn't equal what you were receiving in government benefits. Does this bill address that at all?
Well, it doesn't specifically, but we do know that this is a problem. And it is one that we have long identified. The child care subsidy is really the most critical place where this affects the low wage worker, because so much of your paycheck will need to go towards taking care of your little ones. But the benefit of this plan as it's laid out in S-40 is that the wage grows gradually over time. And so we would have time as legislators to come back and figure out what we need to do to smooth out those benefits cliffs. And the other advantage, obviously, is you if you have more workers earning more wages, then that means more revenue into the state of Vermont. And so we can use that to push back out in the form of benefits.
Representative Turner, would that help alleviate some of your concerns if the question of the benefits cliff was taken out of that equation?
That's a significant concern of ours, but I don't agree with Sarah in that we're going to have less jobs. And we're going to have people, if they make $15 an hour, they're going to be working less hours and getting the same amount of money with some less benefit going forward.
One of the tough things is that we don't know. I mean, we don't know if that would happen. We don't. The projections are just that, projections. Mm-hmm. And Tom Cavett even said this is sort of impossible to predict because no other states have done this in quite the same way that Vermont is proposing. And so we don't know what would happen. And so you have these arguments for and against. And as, you know, taxpayers, residents, it's hard to figure out what do I believe and how do I know who to trust. So, you know, how are you convincing people that you're right about this?
I can't convince people I'm right or wrong.
Why do you feel like you're?
I feel very strongly. I come from a small business family. I understand what it costs to operate and to sign the bottom line of a paycheck. You know, I've worked hard over my career to make sure and take care of our employees and treat them well and give them as much as we can. And I don't believe government should be interfering in this. I mean, there should be a minimum, and there is. But our neighboring state, New Hampshire, has a $7.25 minimum wage. We're at $10.50. I agreed to that increase to $10.50 three or four years ago because I understood the agreement was that we'll leave it alone. We'll raise it up now, artificially increase it, mandate it from Montpelier, and then we'll let the economics drive it as it goes up. That's what I still believe. So, you know, I kind of hate that I have to say I don't support $15 an hour, because if the economy is booming and there's a need for employees, as we see in Chittenden County, we're seeing those wages rise. Many employers in Chittenden County are paying close to 15, if not more, for starting wages because the market is driving it. It's not Montpelier mandating it, and then small businesses have to try to figure out how to absorb it. And then worse, families losing benefits who are getting more and actually ending up with less. So it's a real tough position, and you know it's a challenge, and we work hard. I disagree with Sarah, but we both care deeply about Vermont and Vermonters, and these people are struggling. We get it. We want to help them, but I just have a different way of approaching it.
You mentioned New Hampshire's minimum wage in the $7 range, but isn't Massachusetts in the 11? Isn't Massachusetts' minimum wage $11? So it's sort of state by state. There are a lot of variability.
Absolutely, but ours is increasing annually based on certain indexes. So we have built in a mechanism in Vermont that it will increase annually based on those indexes.
Do you have a sense, Representative Copeland-Hanses, of where we would be in 2024 if this bill doesn't pass, given that the state minimum wage does continue to increase? Because if we're at $10.50 now, you know, 2024, 6 years from now, it would be more than that already.
Yeah, we do have increases in place, and I can't say off the top of my head what where we would be. I think it was going to be somewhere in the $12.50 to $12.75 an hour, based on the statute that we have in place right now. But I wanted to say a few things about neighboring New Hampshire, because I'm on the New Hampshire border, and we do see Vermont businesses being able to attract good workers from across the river. They will drive a little bit farther to come over and work in Vermont. And I've hired a number of people over the years who live in New Hampshire and would prefer to come over and work for us. And it's been to the advantage of my business. But anecdotally, we
also... Do they
also
have to pay Vermont state income taxes, though? I mean, aren't they making extra money by coming over to Vermont when they go back home and they don't have a property tax, they don't have an income tax?
Right, yeah.
But or a sales tax, rather.
They don't have a sales tax. The other thing that we see, though, anecdotally, is that businesses on the New Hampshire side of the river are having to raise their wages. And so we see them needing to compete to keep up, which I think is a really good thing.
But doesn't that then speak to Representative Turner's idea that the economy will actually force that wage increase, that employers...
Well, it was our statute that forced that increase, and it's the competition that New Hampshire, who's at the federal minimum wage, has now for good workers that has pushed that. And so I don't believe that wages will rise quickly enough. We are in an era right now when workers have very little flexibility, very little ability to come together and ask for higher wages. We don't have the organized labor that we once had, who fought for these basic livable wage and benefits. And so I think in the absence of that, if we want people to be able to lift themselves up out of poverty, we need to set a better floor.
Sarah Copeland-Hansis is a Democratic state representative from Bradford. Don Turner is a Republican state representative from Milton and the House Minority Leader. They are joining us today, and we're talking about the impact of an increase in the minimum wage. Legislation that made its way to the governor's desk would raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2024. The bill is not likely to get a sign-off from the governor, so we are also going to be looking at its possibilities in a veto session. And let's go to Peggy, who's calling in from Norwich. Hi, Peggy. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering about this increase from the perspective of people living on tiny Social Security incomes. Do your guests anticipate any kind of sort of general inflationary aspect to this wage increase? Because people on Social Security are basically getting no increases every year, and there's a lot of people, you know, there's an aging population in Vermont, and I just wonder how this could affect them.
Peggy, thanks for the call. Do you have a sense, Representative Copeland-Hansis, of how this affects people who are getting a Social Security benefit?
Imagine that there will be places where they might see prices rise. You know, I just think about the small adjustments that I've made in my business over the last 8 years as the minimum wage has increased about $2.50 over these 8 years. And, you know, for me, I know that we're in a small town with a lot of folks who are on fixed income or working minimum wage jobs. And so I always try to make sure that we keep some affordable menu items on the cafe list.
Can you tell us what your business is?
Yes, yes. I have a small coffee shop on Main Street in Bradford. And so, you know, we might hold the price of a cup of coffee and raise the price of a latte, knowing that people will always have an affordable option. And so, yes, you know, Peggy does bring up a good point that there may be people who have a bit of a challenge in seeing some rising prices. But I think that they'll also see more money flowing through their communities, which will stimulate businesses there.
But not necessarily help them if they're on a fixed income.
That's true.
Don Turner, how do you see the issue?
Actually, I agree with Sarah. Prices are going to rise. People have to maintain their business, and if you have additional costs, you have to raise prices to survive. We'll see more automation, I would believe, in many factors where we can do that. People will be replaced by automation, and businesses that can't survive will be gone, and that's unfortunate.
Aren't people going to be replaced by automation anyway if that's more efficient and easier for businesses?
Yeah, I think so, but I don't think government should be helping push that agenda.
But if people are going to be pushed out by automation and then the jobs that are available are $10.50 an hour, you know, does that sort of knock-on effect mean they're still not making a livable wage, you know, that doesn't actually balance out?
I don't agree. I think that there's a balance, and I think business owners, I know Vermonters that own business, they want to take care of their employees, and they'll do everything they can to take care of their employees. So I have faith in Vermont business.
Let's go to Nicholas, who's calling in from Fletcher. Hi, Nicholas. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'd just like to make a comment about, I see the small businesses are getting picked on a little bit about this $15 minimum wage. And I'm thinking that maybe the service industry, like the ski resorts, McDonald's, Maplefields, these kind of big chains could pick up the tab and make sure that their workers are getting $15 an hour. And maybe the small businesses might not get picked on so much. I'll take my answer off the air.
Nicholas, thanks. Sarah Copeland-Hansis.
So Nicholas brings up a really important point that we think about a lot as we talk about raising the minimum wage. We talk a lot about the impact on small businesses because we recognize that they may have less flexibility and less less of a margin to operate within in order to be able to afford that rise in wage. I know for my small business, we have to be ruthlessly efficient, both with our processes and our product, but also with our personnel. And Nicholas is right to point out that there are probably some larger businesses out there who might be able to make these adjustments by slowing the rate of executive or management salary raises. I know that I am not the highest paid worker in my small business, but there are plenty of small businesses and mid to large businesses whose executives make vastly more money than their entry wage worker. And so, you know, for all of those businesses, we certainly we don't talk about them as much because we recognize that they have a little more flex to work with.
Again, our number, if you'd like to share your thoughts, your questions about this, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your comments at vpr.net or email vermontedition@vpr.net. Let's get another call in here from Sarah in Burlington. Hi, Sarah. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I have a women-owned business. I started a fitness studio in Burlington, and I currently employ some part-time front desk staff, and I mostly employ high school students and college students. It's entry-level work, and the $15 would be quite a lot for the type of position that I offer. And my question is if there would be some kind of exemption that small businesses could apply for things like front desk, entry-level positions. I already pay over minimum wage, but 15 is sort of a stretch given the type of work I'm asking my part-time employees to do.
Sarah, thanks for the call. Don Turner, what do you think? Is that a possibility?
I think it could be a possibility. I don't, as I said, I don't believe the minimum wage should be a livable wage. I'm not disputing that. So I think there should be some means for, you know, student work and so on. And there is some in the bill that passed that does allow for some reductions for students and people that are working just a minimum number of hours.
What are the details of that?
So under current law, that it's a bit confusing for employers to follow the rules correctly, but there is a student wage in current law, and the proposal in S-40 is to maintain that and, in fact, to clarify it for businesses so that they know that for a full-time high school student, they can be paid $3 an hour less than minimum wage when they are a student.
What's the thinking behind that, the sort of ethics and philosophical approach? Because I think back to my time working in high school and college in the summers, and those wages were all I was going to have to be able to live on for that next year in college. You know, granted, I was getting help from my parents to pay for college, but the expenses that were mine were what I earned in the summertime. And so, you know, that idea that you can pay high school students less because it's not a full-time job, what's the thinking?
Well, I know that a lot of high school students who are working because they need to put money in their gas tank and they need to contribute to the insurance on the vehicle that they drive, or maybe they are actually paying outright for the vehicle that they're driving. So it is a bit of a catch there that, you know, you can work, but we're going to pay you less. And then I guess the flip side of that is what Sarah articulated, in that these are kind of training jobs and they are very much entry level and intended to be part-time or short-term.
Right. And then that $15 might be too much to be able to afford for somebody in that position. We got a note from Melanie who says, I own a small licensed childcare center in rural Vermont. I'm usually a liberal and support any program that helps families and children. They are my life. But that's why I oppose this wage increase. I'm required to keep a specific amount of staff per children, and the number of children I can have are set by the state license. I do not have the ability to lower the overhead or increase productivity to cover the ongoing increases in minimum wage. The current mandated raises are already killing my business. I'm barely making salary now by not taking any income for myself and using creative budgeting. Representative Turner, I think you heard from other child care providers in the testimony for this bill. What were they telling you?
The same thing as Melanie's telling us, that they're going to have the most significant impact of this bill would be in the child care sector. We have learned, or we have estimates that it would be a $12.8 million to Vermont's child care sector impact, including net you know, financial reductions in approximately 7,000 families. So Melanie speaks to what we heard, and we hear it loud and clear. The childcare industry cannot afford this, and we shouldn't be doing it.
Where do you think we go with that, Representative Copeland Hanses? Because there are other, there's sort of other cogs in the machine in Montpelier to deal with some of the questions around childcare and that childcare crunch, which I think both parties agree is a problem in this state and beyond this state. So what about Melanie's, you know, questions about, there's no way I can increase efficiency and I can't cut staff because there's a mandated staff to child ratio.
Right. Absolutely. I believe wholeheartedly that we need to increase the child care subsidy. We need to make it more more matching the salary range that child care workers need to be paid. And they need to be paid a dignified, livable wage, just like everyone else. But this is also another opportunity to plug another bill that we worked on this year, which is the Paid Family Leave Insurance Program. And that would allow Vermonters to pay in, you know, a dollar or two a week of their salary. And for that, they would be able to access 6 or 12 weeks, depending on whether both spouses take the leave, in order to be able to stay home and care for that child. And, you know, 12 weeks of childcare for infant care is a really big asset, not to mention the benefits of bonding with your young child.
You're talking about a newborn care or adoption care.
Mm-hmm.
But so not that doesn't include somebody who has a one-year-old but can't afford the child care.
That is true.
Let's go to Krista, who's calling in from Jericho. Hi, Krista. You're on.
Hi. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we gotcha.
Oh, perfect. Sorry. Okay. So I kind of wanted to touch on that Social Security aspect and also Section 8 for people who are working and getting assistance. Like back when I was 18, I had Section 8, and then I got a 25 cent an hour raise, which put me over the limit. My rent doubled from 300 to 600 a month, and then I had to also pay utilities. The only option with that 25 cent raise was to actually quit my job at that point in time in order to continue to be able to live where I was. Otherwise, I would have ended up homeless. And like I have a family member who is working and is on Social Security, and he can't make too much money. Otherwise, he loses his benefits. So if the minimum wage goes up to $15 an hour, are these other aspects being looked into, like what's going to happen to people who are receiving assistance and also still want to work and contribute to society. But if they do and the money goes up, the amount goes up, they have the chance of potentially losing their income or their.
Yeah, or their benefits. Yeah, Krista, I appreciate that. And just for people who are unaware, Section 8 is a housing voucher, a housing subsidy. And it sounds like, Representative Copeland Hanses, that what you're thinking is that because this wage increase is over time and is a gradual increase, that the legislature would come back and address some of those questions about the benefits cliff?
Absolutely. To the greatest extent possible, we want to make sure that people are not losing what they need in order to get by. The idea is that we would continue to the extent that we have control over those benefit levels, we would continue to increase them.
We got a note from Mark who says, why is nobody talking about how an increase to the minimum wage would impact workers who are already making $15 an hour? Is the assumption by lawmakers that as minimum wage goes up, all wages above the minimum will also rise? How would an employee feel who has some years of experience in their job making $15 an hour if a new hire with no experience could just start at the same wage they had to work hard to achieve? You know, we do see some employers across Chittenden County, across other places that are paying at that $14.50, $15 wage. And what do you think would happen when the minimum wage goes up, Representative Turner?
Well, that's been part of our opposition. I touched on it earlier in the show here. I totally agree with Mark that's a problem. I mean, the projections, as you mentioned earlier, Jane, are projections, but there's no way to take into consideration how much impact those additional raises for other employees might have in this whole equation. So that's, again, been one of the reasons why we were very opposed to this raising to $15 per hour.
What do you think, Representative?
Well, you know, we've all heard the saying, never look down on someone unless it's to turn around and offer them a hand up. So the concept of wage compression is one that while it's real from a certain standpoint, that mid-range wage earners might see a slower rate of increase as the bottom end catches up. I think businesses will have to adjust to that in the way that they feel they can. I know in my business it would be to have a team meeting and say, look, we're gonna offer a smaller wage increase, or we're gonna stagger the wage increase. You know, the minimum wage increases come July 1st. That's the dead of winter for us. That's a quiet time. It's a hard time to adjust to an increase in salaries. So maybe my mid-range people will have to wait until July 1st when it's summertime. And
did you mean that the raise goes up in December?
It goes up January 1st.
Okay. I think you said July both times.
Oh, did
so
I
then
say
I was
that?
Confused by the dead of winter. So it goes up January 1st.
It goes up January 1st. Okay. That's the dead of winter. And so maybe my mid-range people will have to wait until July for a raise. But I think businesses will be able to adjust to that. And honestly, if we're all making a dignified wage, one that meets our bills, I think it increases all of our peace of mind and happiness.
Chip writes in to say, I own a medium-sized diversified vegetable farm in Braintree. It's large enough that I need to hire help in order to keep up with demand. I already pay my staff over minimum wage, but would struggle to pay all of them $15 an hour, especially when the workers who are efficient and strong will deserve a raise, while the weakest links will still get $15. This will hurt my farm as well as other small farms. And let's go to Elise calling in from Essex Junction. Hi, Elise. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So my husband and I own a business that we've been working on in Essex Junction for about 4 years, and we actually had a conversation about minimum wage and expanding our business because we certainly could use the help. We're new and we're growing, but we decided that as it's the right thing to do to hire people with livable wage, and I believe $15 is fair and livable. So we decided not to hire people until we can actually provide that for them. I think it's taking advantage of people to give them a lower wage than that.
At least
so
I
made a decision,
yeah,
as a mission for our company. We would not do that.
I appreciate your perspective. Don Turner, what do you think about that? You know, here's Elise saying, I'm a small business owner. This is the right thing to do.
I'm glad. Thank you, Elise. And I'm glad her business can support that, but many can't. And I just think that's a choice that Elise and her husband made and that works for their business. It's not fair that we mandate this from Montpelier. And that's my opposition. We heard a previous caller talk about mandates. Montpelier mandated changes to the childcare industry that essentially drove out most of the in-home daycare providers. So that's a burden from Montpelier that's having an impact on businesses and what it costs for childcare. So I appreciate the caller and I thank them.
I want to get to what happens next because, as we said, this was a kind of a tight vote in the House, and the governor has signaled that this is not something he's going to support. Representative Copeland Hanses, do you have a sense of if you'll be able to muster the votes to override a veto? It doesn't seem like it.
No, it doesn't look that way in the House. It looks like the Senate might have been able to muster that, but on the House side, we're a bit more divided. That doesn't mean that we can't come back and try it again in a future session and see if we can work to grow a stronger coalition.
What do you think that would look like? Because obviously to grow a stronger coalition, there would need to be concessions on both sides. What are you willing to work on or work with?
You know, I think we could do some more exploration of the issues around the benefits cliff and make some better assurances to particularly the childcare industry that this is what the state intends to do to make sure that our childcare centers are able to sustain their business.
Representative Turner, are you willing to come back to the table, talk more about this, or are you hard and fast on no increase, no how, no way?
No, I think that you always have to be open to listen. But right now, you know, we will stand strong with the governor and we'll stand up and fight for the most vulnerable Vermonters, you know, for a stronger economy and opposing this well-intentioned, but I feel harmful legislation.
Well, that was Representative Don Turner, Republican and House Minority Leader from Milton. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you, Jane, for having me on the show.
And Sarah Copeland-Hanses, a Democratic State Representative from Bradford. I appreciate your time on the show today, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.